Well, we've seen now how important the going for refuge is. Whether as a result of seeing the Buddha, hearing the Dharma, or seeing the Sangha, the spiritual community. And we've also seen how the importance of going for refuge is very clear from the scriptures, even though the greater part of the Buddhist world does seem to have forgotten that significance. It's time now that we came on to the levels of going for refuge. And there are altogether six of these. So the sixth one is not, strictly speaking, really a level. The first two levels are lower levels than the level of going for refuge, which is generally described in the scriptures. That is to say, the one with which we've just been dealing, about which we've just been talking. The third level corresponds to the type of going for refuge with which we have just been dealing. The fourth and fifth go further. The sixth is difficult to classify in this way, but we'll look into that when we come to it. The six levels of going for refuge are, first of all, what we may call the cultural going for refuge. Two, the provisional going for refuge. Three, the effective going for refuge. Four, the real going for refuge. Five, the ultimate going for refuge. And six, the cosmic going for refuge. These terms are not very satisfactory, I fully realise, and they may have to be changed later on. Not later on in this lecture, that might be rather confusing, but when I've had time to think about the matter a little more. These six do not correspond to any traditional set or any traditional classification. Some of them do, though, but not all. I shall perhaps correlate them systematically with Buddhist tradition some other time. Meanwhile, I want to say just a few words on each of these levels of going for refuge in turn. And this will give you some idea of what they are all about. First of all, what I've called the cultural going for refuge. We could call this the formal going for refuge, or even the ethnic going for refuge. Take a look at history, as we did the other evening. If we take a look at history, we see that in the course of 1,000, 1,500 and more years, Buddhism spread from India all over Asia. And in some parts of Asia, Buddhism has been well, thoroughly, deeply established for more than 1,500 years. And the result, one of the results of this fact is that practically the entire culture of those areas is Buddhist. And practically the entire population of those areas, at least up to the time of communism, is Buddhist. The population of those areas, we may say, is, or at least until very recently was, as much Buddhist as the population of Europe is Christian, and in much the same way. Generally, in these areas, in these Buddhist countries, people don't actually follow Buddhism as a spiritual teaching, though they may be influenced by it in a highly positive manner on the social level, or even on the ethical level, but nonetheless, they make no conscious effort to evolve individually. They don't follow Buddhism as a spiritual path. The majority. But nonetheless, they're very proud of their Buddhism. It's part of their cultural heritage. More often than not, it's the most important part, even, one might say, practically the whole of their cultural heritage, because before Buddhism, in some cases, they virtually had no culture. Culture came with Buddhism. They got very little except Buddhism on the cultural level. So they're very proud of Buddhism. They're proud of it not only as part of their cultural heritage, but even as part of their national heritage in those areas where, under Western influence, nationalism has become a strong force. And these people consider themselves as Buddhists, that is to say, as what we would call ethnic Buddhists, which is really a contradiction in terms. And what I'd call the cultural going for refuge is the going for refuge of such people. They recite the refuges in Pali or some other language as an affirmation of cultural and national identity. I've met quite a few of these people, mostly on pilgrimage in India, and they'll often tell you, rather proudly, that I'm a born Buddhist. They're very proud of the fact that they're born Buddhists. And they think, very often, that someone who has merely been converted to Buddhism is a rather inferior kind of Buddhist. The real Buddhist is the born Buddhist. The person whose mother and father, grandfather and grandmother were Buddhists before him. I used to take, I must confess, rather a strong line with such people. I used to say that it's completely un-Buddhistic to say that you're a born Buddhist. I used to say, after what did the Buddha say to the Brahmins? The Buddha criticized the Brahmins for claiming to be Brahmins by birth. The Buddha said, you cannot be born a Brahmin. You cannot be a Brahmin by birth. You are a Brahmin only if you possess certain qualities of a Brahmin. In the same way, I said, you can't be a Buddhist by birth. Just because your mother was a Buddhist or your father was a Buddhist, you're Buddhist only if you follow the spiritual path shown by the Buddha, if you practice Buddhism. But I found it usually very, very difficult to convince them. They really did think, or they really did feel, that Buddhism was in their blood. And some of them even seemed to think that because they were born Buddhists and Buddhism was in their blood, they could understand it automatically without study. And however they told you about Buddhism, well, because they said it and they were born Buddhists, it must be correct. And it must also be added that many Hindus think the same thing, even without being Buddhists, just because they were born in India. And Buddhism, of course, as everybody knows, came from India. So because they were born in India, the Buddha too came from India, they take it as axiomatic that they know all about Buddhism and can tell you whatever comes out of their mouth, that is Buddhism. They know it all. So they don't have to study. They've inherited it. It's part of their cultural tradition. And this kind of conceit among both born Buddhists and also born Indians, Hindus, is very common indeed. And I've even met Buddhists who believed that everyone should remain in the religion into which he was born. They used to tell me it was wrong for a Christian to become a Buddhist. A Christian ought to stay a Christian. A Buddhist ought to stay a Buddhist. So one can see how strangely things have developed in certain respects in the Buddhist parts of Asia. Now, in our own movement, in the FWBO, we of course don't have any cultural going for refuge because we've no born Buddhists. But we've something like it, something analogous to it, when someone is attracted to the movement, thinking of the movement as, or seeing the movement as, a sort of positive group. So when people are drawn in this way, attracted to the FWBO because it seems a positive group, because everyone seems happy and healthy and cheerful and friendly, so they're drawn in. They don't bother much about the Buddhist part of it. That doesn't matter so much to them. What do? They just join in happily. They join in everything. If you ask them to meditate, they'll meditate. They don't mind, because they'll get a good chat afterwards, or they'll come along to a festival, or they'll even help you organise a temple, sir. They just enjoy the friendliness of the group. And if you ask them to, sit in on a puja and join in the refuges and precepts, they'll join in quite happily. It's all part of the, good group activity. So this is a sort of cultural activity. I'm not criticising it. It's all right as far as it goes. It just reaches a certain level, and doesn't go any further than that. Huh? So this is what I call the cultural going for refuge. Huh?